Here's Andy Udman.
6 million kids are seriously overweight. Well, in the last 12 years, with all of the attention to obesity, with all the NIH money, with all of the research and programs that have gone on around the country and around the world, with Michelle Obama's vegetable gardens, we are now up to 20 million.
We have a healthcare system that is bankrupting this province, and people are not being told about the negative health consequences of eating these sugary drinks and foods, and yet we have to all pay the brunt of that.
Currently, there are 30% more obese people on the planet than there are undernourished people. This is a complete switch from just 15 years ago when it was the other way around. And this is in countries that still have malnutrition. They now have obesity. This makes no sense.
It not only makes no sense, it is so shocking. You don't think you heard what you just heard. Ryan, would you play that last clip again? It is so shocking.
Currently, there are 30% more obese people on the planet than there are undernourished people. This is a complete switch from just 15 years ago when it was the other way around. And this is in countries that still have malnutrition. They now have obesity. This makes no sense.
I've told this story before. At my sister's wedding in Strathroy in 1963, every male over 16 got a package of cigarettes. Oh boy, have we had our eyes open on that issue, and we have wrestled the tobacco cancer giant, I was going to say, to the ground, not quite. 17 to 20% of Canadians still smoke. We need to do better. Well, folks, it's now time to tackle another monster when it comes to our health. Sugar. Sugar. We're about to meet the author of a book, two books. The first one, Sugar, the Bitter Truth. I love that title. It says it all. And now a more recent book, Fat Chance. Pam Colleen, how did you get this guy to join us this morning? This is amazing.
Well, our guest this morning is, I would deem him to be a celebrity in the nutrition world. He actually became very famous after it was a video that came out called Sugar, the Bitter Truth. And it's had over 3 million hits on YouTube. But when that video came out on YouTube, those of us who know about the negative health consequences of sugar, we all breathed a sigh of relief. We said, finally, somebody from academia is coming forward and criticizing this very damaging food that we see that is so ubiquitous in our grocery store shelves today.
Give me 10 seconds. What's the bitter truth about sugar?
Well, we've had warnings about sugar now for decades. We had John Yudkin. He wrote the book Pure White and Deadly. He was warning us about sugar back in the 1950s, approximately. We've had Bill Duffy, who wrote the book Sugar Blues. We've had Nancy Appleton, who's written a book called Lick the Sugar Habit. We've had people in the past warn us about sugar, but the news of the dangers of sugar were basically put on the back burner. It's hard to get this information out simply because the sugar industry has so much control. Even the World Health Organization has warned us about sugar back in 2003 with a rather seminal report that they wrote. And when the World Health Organization was putting caution, basically limits on our sugar consumption, the sugar industry blew a gasket. And so it's very difficult for the consumer to get this information about how damaging sugar is. And unfortunately, in academia, we're not getting the information through that route or the media. So we've got to find brave souls like Dr. Robert Lustig to come forward and give us the specifics on the dangers of sugar.
Dr. Lustig, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. That was quite an introduction, I must say.
Welcome to Canada. Watch out for high taxes. We'll talk about that another day.
Yes, I'm very careful about that. That's why I live in California.
Well, we like to think that there are some things we have in this country that we get for our taxes, but that's a topic for another day. By the way, you're about to see a rush across the border for Black Friday. I hope you're ready for that rush, which is what we're going to talk about in our next hour, about it's the treason season when we all go shopping in the States. However, we're getting off topic. Dr. Lustig, let's go right to the bottom line. We have a deficit in Ontario this year of about $12 billion. We're going to add it to our debt, which is at $272 billion. The prime factor, there are many, but the prime factor is health care. We're about to go bankrupt trying to stay healthy, and Pam keeps telling us we're fatter, sicker, and more depressed than we've ever been, and we can multiply that by 10 on your side of the border.
Absolutely. This is, look, the fact is, this has been going on in every country. This is not an American problem. This is not a Canadian problem. This is not a UK problem or an Australian problem. This is everywhere. So what, all of a sudden, the entire world just became a bunch of gluttons and sluts all at the same time? When you look at the data, when you actually look at the pattern of spread of obesity and diabetes, it does not look like behavior. What it looks like is an exposure. The fact that you have obese people living in the same neighborhoods as undernourished people says that basically somebody got it and somebody didn't. It looks like an exposure. So the question is, what is it that the entire world has become exposed to over the last 20 years? And the answer, the Western diet, because of its convenience, because of its price, because of its taste. And what's in the Western diet? Well, there are eight things that are different and, to be honest with you, wrong about the Western diet. Let me list them for you so you don't think I'm totally, as we say, fructocentric. There are eight things that are actually wrong. Number one, too little fiber. Number two, deficiency of micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, flavonoids, things like that. Number three, deficiency of omega-3 fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory. Number four, an increase in omega-6 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory and drive heart disease. Number five, branched-chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine. This is what you get from corn-fed beef, corn-fed chicken, and corn-fed fish. This drives liver fat accumulation. Number six, alcohol. Number seven, trans fats, but we know those are bad because the FDA finally, after 25 years, removed them from the generally recognized as safe list. It only took 25 years. And finally, the big kahuna, number eight, the one that the food industry specifically uses to hook us and to keep us coming back for more, sugar. So it's a conglomeration of eight separate things, but by far and away, the one that is the one we have the data for, the one we have causation for, it's sugar, and that's why I speak out about that.
Now, Dr. Lustig, you're a pediatric...
I can't hear.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
No.
You can't hear me. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
No, okay. You're a pediatric endocrinologist at the University of California, San Francisco. What happened when you came forward criticizing sugar? I mean, it's been difficult to get this information out. You're a member of a prestigious university. What happened when you came out with this information?
Well, for the most part, I would say the response has been extraordinarily positive. In fact, surprisingly so. I actually expected to get much more negativity than I ended up getting. As somebody on YouTube once said, there are only four groups that seem to be threatened by this. Number one, the sugar addicts who don't, you know, are in denial and don't want to change. Number two, the people who work for the food industry. Number three, the people who work for government. And number four, the people who are making money off it in some other fashion, you know, from what I call the obesity profiteers. But pretty much the rest of the country, the rest of the world, has been decidedly positive and said, you know, this really does make sense because the science is there.
Now, you mentioned the government. Why aren't they doing more about this to warn us of the consequences of eating sugar? I mean, why aren't they putting warning labels on these foods like they have with cigarettes?
Well, it's very simple, Pam. They are very conflicted. They have two jobs. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is in charge of our health. Don't ask me why.
That's in the United States. So you have the United States USDA.
Right.
And here
the
in Canada, it would be Health Canada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One job is to grow agribusiness, mm-hmm. and that is to sell food. And the other job is to tell us what to eat. And you know what? They can't do both at the same time. And because of the lobbying, because of the money, guess where the effort goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a documentary. BBC did a documentary. I'm not sure if you were featured in that one, but it was The Men Who Made Us Fat.
I was in that one.
Yes, so I saw that.
But you also need to watch The Men Who Made Us Thin.
Yes, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Right. Two great documentaries by the BBC. Yes. And the end of the first series, they interviewed somebody from public health. And I don't know if you saw that segment, but the person that was very... I don't know what the word is, but very elusive in terms of her answers with regards to why public health is not doing more to warn us about sugar.
Doctor, let me just ask you to give us a snapshot of how serious, how big this problem is of sugar. Let's start with a price tag. Have you gotten your calculator out and said, okay, I'm going to put a price tag on this problem?
Well, all right, so diabetes in America last year cost $245 billion, and dementia, which is also a chronic metabolic disease, by the way, cost $200 billion. So that's $500 billion just for those two diseases alone, and we haven't even started touching heart disease, hypertension, lipid problems, cancer. The bottom line is this is why you're breaking the bank. Remember, Canada went, you know, we love the word down here, socialized, back in the 1970s, and there was actually an efflux of Canadians to America to try to keep, you know, the dollars rolling in. You did that back in the 70s very specifically to keep your health costs down, and you can't even do it there because all of the money is going to this.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is you can't make up the difference in terms of prevention because there is no prevention for chronic metabolic disease. Here in America, Obamacare was predicated on the notion that we could put 32 million sick people on the rolls by providing preventative services. But there are no preventative services. What has worked for obesity and diabetes thus far? Nothing. But time to rethink the argument.
I enjoyed the little shot you made about Michelle Obama's vegetable garden. The point there being?
The point there being, this is what the White House wants to espouse. Now, the fact of the matter is they know that sugar is a problem. They've told me so directly to my face. They also told me they were going to do absolutely nothing about it because they don't want the fight with the food industry. They have enough fights.
You got to be kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. That's exactly what they told me. And I can tell you exactly what day they told it to me. And there were witnesses.
And they use exercise as well as a red herring, right? I mean, they try to pretend like they're helping to solve this obesity epidemic, and they're using exercise to distract us from the sugar issue, correct?
Well, exercise is truly a personal issue, mm-hmm. but, you know, our food supply is not. So it's very easy to defer to exercise, and of course, that's what the food industry does. They basically, you know, that's why Coca-Cola sponsors all of these, you know, runs and marathons and, you know, exercise things in schools and everything is basically, you know, a subterfuge for, you know, what they're actually doing.
Doctor, right on that note, how much sugar is there in one can of Coke?
A lot. we're talking about cans now. We're talking, okay, so that's 11 teaspoons. By the way, the American Heart Association says 6 teaspoons of sugar for women, 9 teaspoons of sugar for men, total for the day. And a can of Coke is 11. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're already over the top if you drink a can of Coke.
Doctor, I had a friend who on a hot day in July would stop and pump back 6 cans of Coke in one shot, I should tell you.
Yep.
He died at 44.
I'm sorry to hear that. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact of the matter is, there are stories, anecdotes about all of these things, but to be honest with you, I'm a scientist. You know, ends of one don't make any, you know, don't mean anything to me. What matters to me is the data. And we only had correlative data before, but now we have causative data. And I can categorically say, because we did the study, it was published in February, sugar causes type 2 diabetes. Not type 1, but type 2. And we, if you consume 150 calories extra per day, your prevalence of diabetes goes up a total of 0.1%. Nothing. But if those 150 calories happen to be a can of soda instead, your diabetes prevalence goes up 1.1%.
We're almost at the bottom of the hour. We have 2 minutes. I want to give you that 2 minutes with this scenario.
Yep.
Mr. Obama, President Obama, says my ratings right now are in the toilet. I need to be seen. I need a heritage. I need a legacy. And you know what? This Lustig guy, he's really bugging me, but I'm going to have a coffee with him, and I'm going to give him 2 minutes to talk to me. Give him the 2 minutes right now, if you would, Doctor.
Very simple. You've hung the entire obesity epidemic on personal responsibility. Everybody's in charge of their own food. The libertarians say, get government out of my kitchen. You know, I don't want government in my kitchen either unless there's a more destructive force already there. Personal responsibility is a canard, and the reason is because there are four caveats. Here are the four. Knowledge. You have to have knowledge. The five-year-old who shoots his brother because he didn't know it wasn't a cap gun, it was a real gun, is not personally responsible. Number two, access. We've just denied a whole bunch of people access to vote based on redistricting. Number three, affordability. You have to be able to afford it as a society, that decision. We've just released a whole bunch of drug addicts in California because we can't afford to keep them housed up in prisons. And finally, number four, your personal choice can't hurt anybody else. Well, guess what? All four of those go down the toilet when you talk about obesity and metabolic disease. All four of them are canards, are provisos that don't work. This is not a personal responsibility issue. This is a public health issue, and government is in charge of public health. Get on the stick, Mr. President.
Really quickly, before we take the break, what is the single biggest issue in health care in North America today in terms of a monster that's killing us?
Oh, absolutely. Easy. One word, diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Diabetes.
We have to take
metabolic disease.
We have to take a short break. We'll be back after the news update right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
We have a healthcare system that is bankrupting this province, and people are not being told about the negative health consequences of eating these sugary drinks and foods, and yet we have to all pay the brunt of that.
Currently, there are 30% more obese people on the planet than there are undernourished people. This is a complete switch from just 15 years ago when it was the other way around. And this is in countries that still have malnutrition. They now have obesity. This makes no sense.
Looking through the phone with our modern technology to see if Dr. Ludzik gets up on the table dancing to that song, Sugar, Sugar. Are you, doctor?
Let's put it this way. My blood pressure just went up.
Here's the point, though, doctor. We have always associated sugar with the very best things in life.
Of course. Indeed. This is the biggest problem that we have with this. In 10 words, here's the problem. Sugar is two molecules. One's called glucose, one's called fructose. Glucose is the energy of life, but glucose isn't all that interesting. And we don't really, we like it, but we don't like it that much. You don't see people going around getting glucose tolerance tests for the fun of it. Fructose, on the other hand, is super sweet. We love this stuff, but there is not one biochemical reaction in the entire body that requires it. Now, we do have the ability to metabolize it to a point. Just like any toxin, we can metabolize a little, but we can't metabolize a lot. And unfortunately, because of the way sugar is metabolized, it's actually metabolized just like alcohol. And it does exactly the same damage that excess alcohol does. Basically, a Coke is the alcohol of the child.
In the 1970s, though, high fructose corn syrup hit the market big time and is still very prevalent on the marketplace today. And has been associated with all sorts of health problems, including fatty liver disease.
Absolutely, and for this reason. Because the glucose is metabolized in all the different organs of the body, and it is metabolized like it's supposed to be. And most of it will go to a compound called glycogen. Glycogen is liver starch, and for lack of a better word, glycogen is good. But fructose can't be metabolized to glycogen unless you're glycogen depleted. What happens is excess fructose gets turned into liver fat, and that liver fat clogs up the liver, causes the liver to not work right, and that causes all of the downstream metabolic disasters that we know.
Doctor, I have to tell you, I have something called an outrage radar, and right now I'm sensing that a lot of people in London with a sweet tooth are throwing things at the radio. Shoes, rolls of toilet paper, cutlery.
Yep.
I mean, they're in shock over what you're saying.
Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is, look at the science. They can believe what they want, but the science says something else. Coca-Cola, in its Coming Together ad, says, beating obesity will take action by all of us based on one simple common sense fact. All calories count, no matter where they come from, including Coca-Cola and everything else with calories. So, as far as they're concerned, you can get your calories from carrots, you can get your calories from cheesecake, you can get your calories from Coca-Cola, or anything else with a C for that matter. It's all the same. A calorie is a calorie. That's common sense. Well, I don't believe in common sense. I believe in data. And data, the data say something completely different. What they say is that different calories are metabolized differently. Different calories cause different metabolic perturbations. And for that reason, a calorie is not a calorie. And if you believe a calorie is not a calorie, it gives you a way to actually deal with this problem by supplying the good calories instead of the bad ones.
You had this,
sugar is the bad one.
You had this blockbuster video, Sugar, the Bitter Truth, now the book.
The video is not a book, but the book is a book. It's called Fat Chance. And we also have a cookbook coming out in January. Real food, preparable in a half an hour or less, and every single recipe vetted by a high school student to be nutritious, delicious, and doable.
Let me ask you to compare. I mentioned that at my sister's wedding in 1963, they gave all the guys over 16 a package of cigarettes. And we know what has happened since then in terms of recognizing the monster that tobacco is in terms of an enemy of our health. Make a comparison, if you would, with sugar.
Okay. From the standpoint of the metabolism, sugar's like alcohol. But from the standpoint of the politics, sugar's like tobacco. And the food industry is propping it up and attacking people just like tobacco did in the exact same way. And they are throwing money at this to make sure that, you know, no legislation or litigation is successful. The good news is that legislation has finally been successful in Mexico. Mexico, just 2 weeks ago, passed a soda tax. And remember, they don't even have potable water because they get it. And it took a lot of money to fight the sugar industry down there to get this. Remember, Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, before he was president, was head of Coca-Cola. Why do you think Mexico now has the highest rate of obesity in the world? Well, they recognize it, and they are now taxing soda. So if they can do it, we can do it.
Now, there have been a few brave soldiers recently step forward, like Michael Bloomberg in New York City.
Indeed.
What's the status of his effort?
All right, well, here's the problem with Bloomberg's big gulp ban. Is the right thing to do, but unfortunately, the Department of Health only has jurisdiction over dispenser drinks. They do not have jurisdiction over drinks that come in a bottle with a cap. That's the Commerce Clause, and the city can't undo a Commerce Clause here in America. They can regulate dispenser drinks, so that's why it was the big gulp ban, because it had to do with open glasses, you know, open cups of 16 ounces or more. So the judge in the Bloomberg debacle called this arbitrary and capricious, because you can walk into a 7-Eleven and buy a quart of Coke, but you can't buy a 20-ounce cup. So that seemed very arbitrary and capricious. And to some extent, that would seem rational on the surface. But the fact is, this is what they could do, and there's no reason that they shouldn't do it. And the science says that they should do it. So I was completely in favor. The problem is that the courts have not yet recognized that when someone drinks a big gulp, they are hurting other people. They're hurting other people economically because we cannot afford the diabetes that these people are now bringing to our health care tobacco.
Okay, let's go quickly through the sources of sugar that you're most concerned about. Let's pick five or six of the primary sources of sugar that you're concerned about. And then the obvious question, are there good sugars? Are there bad sugars?
Okay. So the big problem here is that there are 56 names for sugar. 56. And they're all used by the food industry because that's the way they hide it in plain sight. They can put a different kind of sugar in any given food as number 5, number 6, number 7, number 8, number 9 on the food label. When you add it up, it's number 1. And you're not allowed to know it. More importantly, if you look at the side of the food label, where it says sugar, there's no percent daily value. There's no number there that says how much is too much, and that's on purpose, because the U.S. Department of Agriculture has never passed a dietary reference intake for sugar, and the reason is because the food industry doesn't want you to know how much is too much, because if you knew how much was too much, then you wouldn't buy any of their products. So this is where we have to, start. We have to start with, number one, politician education, and that can only come from public education, because ultimately politicians lead from behind. Basically, they read the voters. When there are more votes than dollars, that's when this will change. And that's why I'm doing your show right now, Andy, is because your public needs to understand that they are getting snowed. Okay? They're getting snowed by a different white powder instead of the one you usually get up there in London.
Okay, so the primary sources of sugar that we need to look at and say, okay, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the different types of sugar, there's one called glucose. There's one called fructose. Now, glucose and fructose together, when you join them, make up something called sucrose. That's table sugar. That's the white stuff. That's the crystals. That's the stuff you put in your coffee. In addition, if you don't join them, then you have something called high fructose corn syrup. But high fructose corn syrup is basically the same as sucrose in the sense that it's about half and half. It's actually 55-45. But all the empiric studies that pit HFCS against sucrose basically shown no metabolic difference, and I agree with that. There is no inherent difference between the two. The big problem with HFCS is it's cheaper, and because it's cheaper, it started appearing in everything. Then, of course, there are other sugars, like, for instance, galactose, which is what's in milk sugar, and galactose gets converted to glucose in your liver immediately and basically causes no extra problems that glucose doesn't. So it's sort of a non-issue. Then, of course, there's starch, which is polymerized glucose, and starch gets broken down into little glucose molecules, and that can raise your insulin, which can also be a problem in terms of weight gain. But the thing that's the problem is the liver fat. The thing that's the problem that causes the metabolic disease is the liver fat, and that comes from fructose. That comes from the sweet stuff.
Okay. Are there food? You mentioned about the example in Mexico with a tax. What is the approach? Are there certain foods you think should simply be banned?
No, I don't think any food should be banned. I am not interested in banning. Look what happened with alcohol. We tried to ban alcohol, and it was the biggest disaster we ever had. We needed an amendment to our Constitution to repeal, the ban, the 19th Amendment. But bottom line, that's not going to work. No, we're not going to have speakeasy ice cream parlors. I mean, that's just crazy. I'm not for that. There's something called the iron law of alcohol policy. That is, if you reduce the availability of alcohol, you will then reduce consumption and you will reduce alcohol-related health harms. And they have actually done that in the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. They have actually reduced total alcohol consumption by doing what is known as differential subsidization. That is, subsidize the things you want people to consume and tax the hell out of the things you don't want people to consume. We in America do it the exact opposite. We subsidize the stuff they shouldn't consume and tax the hell out of the stuff that we want them to. We could turn it around. We could actually subsidize the good stuff. We could subsidize produce. We could subsidize fruits, vegetables, broccoli, et cetera, things like that. We could do that. And we could tax the hell out of the other stuff, and the food industry would still make its money, and that's all they care about. The only thing they want to do is sell. And as long as they keep their sales up, they don't care what they sell, and they've told me so. The point is, right now, because of government subsidies and because of government tariffs, we are selling the wrong stuff. And the food industry is making money hand over fist, and we're getting sick in the process.
Do you notice a change happening? I mean, you've been featured in a lot of TV shows lately, even on the CBC. The Fifth Estate featured you in their expose on sugar called The Secrets of Sugar. In Australia, you've been featured in a video, The Heart of the Matter, called Toxic Sugar. I mean, you're getting lots of airtime out there. Do you notice things changing?
Well, look, Mexico changed. Chile now has banned junk food marketing to children, and Peru is considering doing exactly the same thing. Yes, there is a change. Think about this. There have been three cultural seed changes that have occurred in the last 30 years. Here they are. Condoms in bathrooms, seat belts, and smoking in public places. 30 years ago, all of those were anathema. All of those would have been laughed at. And now they're facts of life. You can have cultural seed changes. But in order to do it, you have to have massive public education so that the populace actually gets it. Now, we are just beginning this process here in America on this issue. And we have actually formed a nonprofit called the Institute for Responsible Nutrition to do exactly this, to basically facilitate that cultural seed change that needs to happen around our diet. It's going to take at least a decade and probably more. But, you know, you got to start somewhere.
If we did everything that you would suggest we do, give us 10 years, what would happen to the numbers of people suffering from diabetes?
They would start going down. Now, we, in our paper that we published earlier this year showing that sugar was causative, what we saw was a three-year hiatus. Any country that increased its dose of sugar increased its diabetes rate 3 years later, and any country that decreased its sugar consumption decreased its diabetes 3 years later. So it's going to take a good probably 5 to 8 to 10 years to sort of get on top of this and start seeing some changes. And then hopefully 3 years later, we would start seeing reductions in the rate of diabetes. And that would allow for being able to actually afford our health care.
We're going
to
allow one real quick question from Jim. Jim, go ahead. You're a diabetic?
I'm a type 2 diabetic diagnosed about 10 years ago. Is not diabetes still a genetic disorder? And there are certain triggers that the loaded gun is genes, and there are certain triggers. I was 240 pounds. I'm now 170. But I had some stress in my life, the stress plus the obesity, and it triggered the diabetic gene, and I'm a type 2.
Okay. The short answer is no. Let me explain. There have been many, many studies. They're called genome-wide associated studies, GWAS studies. And what they are looking for are genes associated with type 2 diabetes. And when you add up all the genes, and there are many, there's one called TCF7L2, there's a bunch of genes that have been associated with diabetes. But when you add them up, if you had every single one of those genes, your risk for diabetes would still only be 20%. That means that 80% is environmental. So is there an interaction between genes and environment? Absolutely. If you have bad genes, is it easier to get diabetes? Absolutely. But the bottom line is the majority of it is still an environmental trigger, and this is it.
Doctor, I always want to give people a really nice, straightforward takeaway so they can begin a plan of action. Can we spend the 3 minutes we have left 90 seconds on the problem and then 90 seconds on the solution?
The problem is that we have abdicated our diet to the food industry. And we did it with basically they've taken over with our tacit approval, because when they sell it, you buy it. There are two business rules. One is we give the public what it wants, and the second one is if you build it, they will come. And the food industry is doing both. They call it reactive, but in fact, they're proactive. They've been adding extra sugar to every single food, and our sugar consumption has just gone through the roof, and in the process, we've all gotten sick. You can't, you can't poison your population. Guess who did that before? Tobacco did that before. We're going to end up having to fight this battle just like we did tobacco. And we needed several different pieces to do that. We needed public education, which is what we're in the process of doing. We needed research to demonstrate the link between the two, and that is still going on with respect to sugar. We're not done with that yet. We needed advocacy. We actually had to change what happened in Washington. Remember the five guys that put their hands up and swore on a stack of Bibles that tobacco wasn't addictive and they were lying through their teeth? So we need to hold these people's feet to the fire. And finally, we need action. And unfortunately, in America at least, action also includes litigation. And that's how we broke tobacco. We broke tobacco with litigation. The Mississippi Attorney General suing tobacco over Medicaid costs related to lung cancer. Well, you know what? We could sue Big Food for Medicaid costs related to diabetes, and we could do it tomorrow.
Wow. What an hour. Doctor, are people listening? It took a lot of years to get people to... There's still people who don't think there's any connection between tobacco and heart disease. How many years are going to take to convince them that sugar's killing us?
Well, you know, Andy, you can live in a bubble. But, you know, that's not doing anybody any good. Ultimately, I can't fix people who don't want to be fixed. That's what I've learned as a physician for 33 years. But the majority of people do want to be fixed. There's something called pleasure, and there's something called happiness. And happiness starts with health. If you are unhealthy, you are unhappy. And, you know, pleasure is the opposite of happiness. Pleasure makes you unhappy because pleasure leads to addiction, and addiction leads to unhappiness. And sugar is, for lack of a better word, weakly addictive.
When you die at 120 because you've been eating such a healthy diet, what are they going to put on your tombstone, Dr. Lustig?
Well, first of all, I doubt highly I'm going to get to 120. I hope they put on my tombstone a doctor who actually gave a damn.
And what are your plans for the future? Have you got any other books or projects in the works?
We're doing a whole bunch of things with the nonprofit. We're trying to, you know, basically jumpstart this issue. We're working with several private firms to develop a massive online open course that will basically bring the information to people, and hopefully they would heed it and improve their health, which would then improve the expenditures that these various private concerns are having.
Is your nonprofit...
We're starting to work with governments. Mm-hmm. We have lines to various governments around the world who want to tackle this problem and have recognized that as a public health crisis rather than a personal responsibility issue. And we are conducting research to try to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is what's going on.
Doctor, we have to leave it there. Real quick question. I take my coffee regular. Should I drop the sugar?
Absolutely.
And your nonprofit is called the Institute for Responsible...
For Responsible Nutrition. It's responsiblefoods.org. Sign up and, you know, get educated.
Doctor, perfect. So kind of you to spend all this time. We thank you for the bitter truth about sugar.
My pleasure, Andy, and thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, terrific. Okay, sum it all up in 10 seconds.
Well, I think people need to listen to Dr. Lustig. I think we need to get more politicians involved, and we need to get our health officials involved in this. I mean, as he said, we're too complacent about this. We have to do much more.
Sugar's killing us.
Sugar's killing us.
Yeah. 11 o'clock news. When we come back, we're going to...